You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the SEA. You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the SEA.
Hello and welcome to a special episode of the Fabulous Peltoncast. I'm your co-host, Kevin Pelton.
And I'm Tristan Caracino.
And we are coming to you from Boulevard Park, Washington, home of the Peltoncast, for one of our favorite episodes of the year. In the other annual tradition, our 2018 Seattle Sports Year in Review, plus 2019 bold predictions.
Oh, I've been waiting for this all year. So excited about it. From the moment we recorded last year's bold predictions, I couldn't wait to hear how right I was on most of them. Find out in just a little bit about how you, me, and special guest Mina Kimes did on our 2018 bold predictions, and stick around for 2019 bold predictions. But before we get there, we have to recap what was a pretty fun 2018 in Seattle sports, except for all of the year for the Seahawks until week three.
It was an interesting year in Seattle sports.
Week five.
Because it felt like there was a diverse set of stories that was grabbing our attention over the course of the year. Like, it wasn't as Seahawks-centric as it perhaps has been at times in the past.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's definitely true. Also, because it was a long, complicated offseason, I think we were looking for other stories to kind of grab our attention, for other things in Seattle sports to be paying attention to.
And then a couple of stories I think that are going to have long-term ramifications well beyond 2018.
And there are things that we paid attention to kind of throughout the year that won't be mentioned here, like Portland Trailblazers getting the number three seed in the playoffs last year, and then subsequently getting swept out of the first round. But things that we had paid attention to and monitored throughout the year, but weren't exactly Seattle sports, but kind of grabbed our attention. Kevin Durant being sort of an honorary Seattle sports star, paying attention to him winning his second championship in a row. He won the NBA Finals MVP, right?
Yes.
So
he finished number two in my 2018 ESPN Plus Golden Basketball Awards behind LeBron, who's dominated that award.
Golden Basketball Awards.
Yeah.
Number one in your awards for top Kevins of the year, though.
I'll have to consider those rankings. He's a strong favorite, yeah.
Kevin Pelton comes in number one every year.
Okay, let's begin here with the honorable mentions, the other important sports stories that did not crack the top 10. The Seahawks section, Seahawks fire offensive coordinator Daryl Bevel, offensive line coach / run game coordinator Tom Cable, and defensive coordinator Chris Richard. In a purge of their coordinator level talent.
Yep. This is an honorable mention, but every single positive Seahawk thing you hear after that, you can owe to these, not necessarily to the decision to fire Tom Cable.
We'll have some more about this on the bold predictions, but for now, I just want to say, by the way, shout out to Ken Norton, who never gets enough credit.
Shout out to Ken Norton, but also this defense would be exactly the same or better with Chris Richard.
I don't know.
I don't believe that the difference between... It's funny also
they might be slightly
Chris
worse.
Richard getting so now much credit in Dallas. He's
it
like a hot secondary coach. I mean, he's going to be a defensive coordinator next year.
Possibly a head coach. He might just skip the defensive
coordinator. This is not an official bold prediction, but Chris Richard will not be the secondary coach in Dallas next year.
All right, next up, Seahawks draft running back Rashad Penny in the first round. A selection that was most aptly commemorated by a drunken Tristan walking around the streets of L.A. on the tasteful profanity.
Can you believe they traded Earl Thomas that day, too?
No, that would have cracked the top 10, you would think.
The Rashad Penny draft pick, not the most memorable story coming out, probably one that we've pored over the most after that, but not the most memorable story that came out of this 2018 Seahawks draft.
That's because in the second day, or the third day of the draft, I should say, the Seahawks drafted Shaquem Griffin, reuniting him with twin Shaquille Griffin, and really warming the hearts of people across the nation, as well as also drafting Michael Dixon on the third day.
Fun day.
Yeah.
I mean, and also, let's not forget here, yay though he may be injured, the Seahawks tight end of the future?
Thrill Dissly?
You're forgetting about the thrill.
I would never think about the thrill.
I should have made a bold prediction about the thrill being back. Ah! Because in 2019, the thrill is back.
In the sense that he plays football, or in the sense
In the sense that he's going for over 1,000 yards next year.
Oh, wow. I wish that was a bold prediction.
But Shaquem Griffin easily, I mean, one of the most important draft picks of the entire draft, and him being reunited with his brother here, somebody who's featured in a national Nike campaign for everything that he overcame, to be drafted into the NFL, probably going a little bit higher than people anticipated, and somebody who's not just a football player and not just somebody who Seahawks fans love, but an inspiration to people throughout the country.
Absolutely. All right, the last Seahawks honorable mention, Pete Carroll getting his contract extended here within the past week. When he says win forever, he might mean it literally. Oldest coach in the NFL, 3-year contract extension. And I am, I mean, like,
oldest coach in the NFL.
It makes sense. Oh, makes sense.
He's old enough, actually, if you didn't know this, mathematically speaking, to be Sean McVay's great-great-grandfather.
Oh, boy. That's shocking. Mm-hmm. It's like the, what was that?
Nate Carroll is going to retire before Pete Carroll does.
I like it. The most interesting coach in the world. In less pleasant management news, we had allegations of racism and sexism against the Mariners management staff earlier this year, brought forward by previously fired Dr. Lorena Martin, who last week filed a wrongful termination lawsuit against the organization. So this story will continue for the foreseeable future.
Just a fun year for the Mariners.
Yeah. I don't know if I put in here Mariners' second half collapse. But that was the thing that happened. UW men's basketball, Mike Hopkins, was named Pac-12 Coach of the Year during his first year at UW, finding those expectations a little more difficult to live up to during year number two so far. And then the biggest highlight in 2018, rather, for the Husky men's basketball team, upsetting Arizona and former coach Lorenzo Romar, who was on the other sidelines as an assistant, as well as future number one overall pick DeAndre Ayton, in a memorable game at Heck Ed.
God, that was fun. We'll always have that one moment.
Well, the Sounders, they don't appear anywhere in the top 10, but had lots of important stories nonetheless, starting with the transition at the striker position. Jordan Morris tearing his ACL during the CONCACAF Champions League play leading up to the start of the MLS season. Then midway through the season, Quint Dempsey announcing his retirement after falling out of favor during the course of the year and struggling to maintain his previous form. And then the Sounders revitalized their attack by signing mid-season Raul Ruiz Diaz, who went on to score nearly a goal per match the rest of the way as the Sounders claimed the number two seed in the Western Conference.
And I think in general also, I mean, it's a bit of a story that we had talked on the 4th of July, basically the polar opposite of this podcast, being timeline-wise, being the 4th of July. We talked about at that point the Sounders season was over.
Yes.
And then putting it together and actually making the playoffs, going in with the number two seed.
Getting a bye.
I mean, the second half comeback that they had, you mentioned the Mariners drop off in the second half, basically a mirror image of exactly what the Mariners were doing.
Yeah, we graphed it. It is exactly a mirror image. The Sounders, though, despite that bye, went on to lose a wild playoff series against the rival Portland Timbers, a derby playoff matchup. Losing 2-1 in Portland, then that game, the aggregate series, went into extra time in Seattle. Both teams scored in the extra time. That did not give the Timbers the win on the road goal differential, as some of their players thought. The game culminated in a shootout where, sadly, the Timbers knocked out the Sounders. Both Seattle soccer teams, of course, pro soccer teams, knocked out by Portland as the rain after a solid bounce-back regular season, as the number three seed in the NWSL were eliminated by the Thorns. Let's turn now to the top 10. Oh, I'm sorry, actually, no, one more we have to get in here. The most important one, of course, is that after a long day marred by the first flip at Seafair in many, many years, eventually our mom and I stuck it out to see the Les Schwab and driver Andrew Tate win the Albert Lee Cup at Seafair, thanks to a penalty on Jimmy Shane in the home street bank.
Oh, and a classic Seafair. one where the final race wasn't raced until like an hour plus after it was supposed to go off.
Yeah.
I mean, it was
starting to get dark.
It was deep into the smoky air of Seattle in August.
The hazy evening.
But we had great tacos after that, so it was worth it.
We did. All right, now to our top 10 stories. Number 10, UW baseball reaches the College World Series for the first time, upsetting Cal State Fullerton in the regional final. And I had never paid any attention to UW baseball whatsoever.
Speaking of upsets, them being UW baseball being in the top 10 sports stories of the year.
But we all rallied together against UW baseball for one glorious weekend. And what a great time it was.
There were at least a solid two weekends that we rallied together.
Yeah, we paid attention to the College World Series.
I went to a UW baseball game.
That is true. That does check out. I guess, yeah, that was two weekends. Number nine, this was coming on the heels of UW softball losing the Women's College World Series Championship Series to Florida State after getting the farthest they'd gotten since winning the championship in 2009.
When I think kind of these two coupled together and UW baseball, kind of both of these sports giving people something to rally around in the springtime when there's not a lot happening sports-wise, especially in a city where there's no basketball happening, there are no playoffs. You know, the Mariners were looking okay at that point, but competitive playoff baseball happening from both of these teams was a pretty thrilling thing to pay attention to and a nice distraction from kind of everything that was going on in a long, complicated Seahawks offseason.
Number eight, UW football wins the sixth consecutive Apple Cup. And the snow on the Palouse, ending the Cougars' hopes of going to the Rose Bowl and setting themselves up for, spoiler alert for a future story in this list, a chance to do so themselves.
Oh, this was fun.
It was.
I mean, this was probably, all Apple Cup wins are great.
True.
The best Apple Cup wins are the ones that Wazoo goes into the game and expects to win. I mean, like,
I was going to say the best Apple Cup wins were the ones with something at stake in terms of the Pac-12 North, but that's also true.
The pegs that the Huskies dropped Wazoo down to move them from going what likely would have been a Rose Bowl appearance for them all the way down to playing Iowa State in the Alamo Bowl on, like, December 27th, like, their season... Their season means so much less because of that one loss. And vice versa for the Huskies. Yeah,
conversely. All right, number seven, Breanna Stewart, named the WNBA's most valuable player. Joining Lauren Jackson is Storm MVPs. And we don't have a long MVP history in the city of Seattle. Sean Alexander, Ichiro. But it's good to add Breanna Stewart to that list.
So MVPs ever are Sean Alexander, Ichiro, Lauren Jackson, Breanna Stewart.
Ken Griffey.
I was going to say, Ken Griffey Jr. Yeah. Must have won one in there. That's really impressive.
Yeah. Number six, the Mariners rebuild their roster after the second half collapse by trading Robinson Cano, James Paxton, and Gene Segura among too many others today.
And when you say rebuild their roster, what you really mean is the Mariners start the process.
Tear down.
I mean, they're nowhere near the point of trusting the process. Right now, they're just beginning the process because it is going to be a long, hard journey for the Mariners, which do not feature a lot of wins or playoff appearances.
Number five, the Seahawks return.
But quickly on the Mariners, I think that we both agree that this is, if the Mariners ever want to reach a point of actual contention, I think we both agree that this is what they had to do.
Yes.
And at some point, they avoided it for a long time. They tried to throw money at the problem and veterans. And instead of building up a farm system, just trade. They're still going to trade. Don't worry.
I mean, no.
The trades aren't over yet. But this looks like a real commitment to building a sustainable winning baseball team, more so than kind of what they're trying to cobble together the last 4 or 5 years.
Correct. Number five. The Seahawks return to the NFL playoffs for the sixth time in 7 years without defensive standouts, having traded Michael Bennett, released Richard Sherman, and saw Earl Thomas, after a holdout, see his season ended by injury.
And, you know, we're not going to actually mention him all that much during this podcast, but the real person we can credit for this is not Pete Carroll with that extension. It's Russell Wilson. I mean, to have a team that is losing, is Richard Sherman a Hall of Famer?
Probably.
That is, throughout the season, lost probable at least Seahawks Hall of Fame, right? Ring of Honor players.
Oh, yeah.
Ring of Honor players, NFL Hall of Famers, Richard Sherman, Earl Thomas, like Ring of Honor players, Michael Bennett, Cam Chancellor. So many players from this defense, including other, you know, important offensive players like Paul Richardson, like Jimmy Graham. I mean, this team lost so much. And Sheldon Richardson, too, somebody who will probably not be that remembered in the history of the Seahawks looking back on it.
I'll remember the draft picks.
Still in it.
I'll remember the loss of Jermaine Kearse.
still an important player to this team. So many things go away, and yet one real steadying factor, and that being Russell Wilson, having probably his best season in the last 3 years, especially efficiency-wise, and I mean, putting together just a marvelous season, and showing us that, you know, last year we did a Seahawks Year in Review podcast, where I said that he was the 8th to 15th best quarterback in the NFL.
I was about to bring that up.
And what I really mean to say is he's the first to fourth best quarterback in the NFL.
I think we're overcorrecting a bit there. Number four short story of the year. UW football wins the Pac-12 championship in a thrilling game against Utah and secures its first Rose Bowl bid in 18 years.
18 years.
It's half my life.
That's crazy. Well, and really, Husky football playing in the game that they were meant to play in. I mean, this is, for people who grew up in Seattle kind of in the 80s and 90s, Husky football belongs in the Rose Bowl.
Yes.
And to get back there, not having played there, and granted having some excellent seasons in between, but not having played in the Rose Bowl for 18 years, it's pretty crazy.
They actually have played in the Rose Bowl. They played there in like October. But
that's a good one. Thanks. You sound just like Baby Fantasy Genius. You two are right on the same level. You said get what I'm saying, a little bit less. But having played in very impressive games before then, but this means something a little bit more. You know, playing Penn State in the Fiesta Bowl was nice, and winning a Fiesta Bowl would have been amazing. But being able to play in the Rose Bowl game, to go to Pasadena and have kind of the traditional Pac-12 Big Ten champion, this matters.
Yep. I can't believe you took my argument here. Usually I'm on that side.
I don't think that they should go back to, you know what, I would much prefer the Huskies playing in a playoff. Right now, if you would have told me you could have the Rose Bowl, you could have an 18 playoff, and the Huskies are in it, I'm taking that 100 times out of 100. But if they're going to be playing in bowl games, if this is going to be the setup, I also think you could do both. They could have played this game and had it be a playoff game after. If you have to be working in the current setup as it is, the Huskies belong in the Rose Bowl.
Number three, a momentous, sad story. Seahawks owner Paul Allen dies at age 65 after the return of non-Hodgkin lymphoma, which he had previously successfully beat. I mean, it's impossible to overstate the importance that Paul Allen has to the Seahawks and to Seattle sports more generally.
And I think, you know, this is one that you mentioned some things that we'll see the lasting effect of them long term. Yes. This is one, I mean, it's still relatively new news. We don't know what the long term effects are going to be. It seems like the Seahawks are a pretty steady ship under Paul and sister Jody, but and especially when you look at the extension given to Pete Carroll earlier in the week, and that kind of felt like something that was sort of like carry on with business as usual. But this is something that we'll be feeling for a very long time. Again, Paul Allen, somebody who in the Sonics, when there was a vote in the NBA for the Sonics to move to Oklahoma, one of two owners who voted against it, a person who has been supportive of sports in Seattle from the very beginning, and the person who, for all intents and purposes, saved football in Seattle.
For sure. And also then an instrumental role in bringing the MLS to Seattle, first by, you know, working with soccer groups to ensure that CenturyLink Field was designed to be soccer friendly. And then subsequently by is an investor in Sounders FC when they came into the MLS as an expansion franchise and had backing from the Seahawks organization at that point that helped them get off the ground. So, you know, again, impossible to overstate his impact on Seattle sports, and he will be missed. Speaking of passings in Seattle sports, we got news on Wednesday that former Sounders manager Ziggy Schmidt had passed away at the age of 65.
And somebody who is a central figure to the Sounders, especially their early seasons, carried them to the playoffs every single time, every single year that he was the manager of the club, and really the public face of the Sounders from the start.
You know, one of the few constants. I mean, they did have, you know, a fairly consistent roster and, you know, figures like Osvaldo Alonso, who is still for the moment on the roster, Brad Evans, who recently retired, was a fixture, you know, throughout Ziggy's entire time here. But, you know, someone who defined the culture and the style of play for the Sounders from their existence, you know, for almost the first decade that they were around.
And also a big figure in American soccer. Somebody who came over from managing the Columbus Crew to managing the Sounders and then moving on to manage the Galaxy after that. A huge figure in American soccer.
And a huge loss. So very sad news today. All right, number two, a happier story. The Seattle Storm wins the third WNBA championship for the franchise, defeating the Washington Mystics 3-0 in the WNBA Finals after outlasting the Phoenix Mercury in a thrilling five-game semifinal series.
And one that was closer than maybe we thought it would be.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, definitely. It was, they had to work for this one. And as you predicted at the time, that did end up being kind of the real championship series for the Storm. But a season that largely came out of nowhere. They were, you know, below 500 the previous season, had lost in the first round of the playoffs the previous 2 years, hadn't won a playoff series since winning the championship in 2010. An entirely new roster that really grew up over the course of the season with a new head coach, Dan Hughes, who got the most out of it. So an exciting thing to see, and they're not done.
And we do kind of the list of champions from Seattle. We have the Metropolitans.
Yep.
We have the Sonics.
Yep.
We have Husky football.
Yep. I mean, there's obviously a lot of other UW champion national championships in there, but
not baseball.
No.
We have Husky softball, though.
Yes. The Storm came before Husky softball.
And then the Storm.
Yeah.
Right? That's it.
Did you said the Seahawks at the start?
Oh, yeah, the Seahawks. I remember them, Super Bowl 48.
Did you listen? And you had the Sonics?
Yes.
Okay.
But, I mean, the Storm. And
we're not winning championships every day. Holding parades every day.
The size of the league is smaller. It's a little bit easier to win a championship. Yes. But there's one of these teams, Husky football, has won one, maybe two.
I think they're claiming any others besides 1960. I can't remember.
It requires some complicated math to get them that much past one. The Sonics won one. The Seahawks have won one. The Metropolitans won one. Husky softball, they've only won one that also, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, for being a three-time champion, it's pretty impressive stuff.
Absolutely. All right, number one sports story of 2018, another one that will have long-lasting implications, the NHL awarding Seattle an expansion franchise at long last in December, and subsequently the demolition of Key Arena beginning as part of the renovation that will lead to the new arena at Seattle Center under the Oakview Group management.
Mark your calendars for 2021.
Yeah, that was actually the big story here. I mean, again, we knew that as long as something didn't go horribly wrong, after the Seattle City Council approved the renovation plan for Key Arena, we knew that NHL expansion was sure to follow. But give a lot of credit to the NHL Seattle Group and Oakview Group for following through with strong execution at every step of the way and making sure this would happen. Although, ultimately, 2020, getting it done in 2 years proved to be too tight a timeline. So instead, we await the arrival of the NHL in 2021.
So it became official this year. And really, most importantly, the timeline, we got it. And probably won't be any bold predictions about them for a couple of years.
I hope so. Some people have gone a little bit off in their bold predictions in the past. So that was the year in Seattle sports. Now we pause to honor the most important figure in Seattle sports of the past year. We'll start by going over our past choices. In 2013, you took Russell Wilson. I took Pete Carroll. In 2014, you took Richard Sherman. I took Marshawn Lynch. In 2015, you took Michael Bennett. I took Russell Wilson at that point after his best season to date. In 2016, we both had Chris Peterson, although that was the year you gave the honorable sports figure of the year to Kevin Durant for signing with the Warriors and leaving the Oklahoma City Thunder. In 2017, you went with Clint Dempsey, which seems like so long ago that Clint Dempsey could be the sports figure of the year, but it was true. I went with Tim Leiwicki for his role in the renovation of Key Arena and subsequently getting an NHL expansion franchise. But 2018, again, in 2016, we're unanimous. We're united on this one.
There's only one champion in the city of Seattle this year, and that was the Seattle Storm. And yay, though Brianna Stewart may have been the MVP, this was Sue Bird's championship.
It was. I agree. Stephen Cohen, our former Third Peloton brother, wrote a great piece on The Athletic Seattle about Stewie's season and picking her as their Seattle Sports Figure of the Year in The Athletic's site-wide thing.
They stole Seattle Sports Figure of the Year from us.
They did.
Wow, we invented that idea.
Coined it. What is the Seattle Sports Star of the Year awards you're talking about? Yeah, I mean, partially because, so the way we do it, like the Seattle Sports Star of the Year, you can only win it one time and then you're no longer eligible. Like, I don't want to say the guarantee that Stewie's going to win in a future year. She's got opportunities in front of her. Sue Bird is going into her 17th WNBA season. It's more likely now or never for Sue.
But to me, it's not even about that. It's not even about saying next year it'll be Breonna Stewart, because we don't know what's going to happen, right? We don't know which Husky baseball player is going to step up.
Yes.
But it's more about coming into her, this was her 16th season?
Yeah.
Her 16th season, coming off a losing season, them drafting what might be her eventual replacement in Jordan Canada this offseason. Sue Bird going into the year with very few expectations and then leading the Storm to the number one seed in the Western Conference, leading them with a broken nose against her long-term rival, Diana Taurasi, having a monster game and carrying them back in that series, winning the championship, and then also accepting the front office position with the Denver Nuggets.
Yep.
Just like, boom, 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 boom. This was Sue Bird's year through and through. And really, you know, we'll discuss this more later with Natalie, but kind of coming into her own as a personality. And Sue Bird kind of owned Seattle there for a few months.
She did. I mean, I think when you look at the Russell Wilson's probably still the most popular athlete in Seattle, but Sue's approval rating is 100%. You still get like the random troll on the internet who thinks that Russell Wilson is not good at football, weirdly. No one thinks that about Sue.
Too short.
As you alluded, we're going to bring in Natalie Weiner of SB Nation now to help us discuss this award and Sue's season. Obviously, Breonna Stewart was the best player on the Storm this year. She was the MVP of the WNBA during the regular season, MVP of the WNBA Finals, and yet she wasn't either of our picks. We both went with Sue Bird instead. Is that a ridiculous choice, Natalie?
I don't think it's ridiculous. I mean, like, Sue is obviously still the leader of the team, and she's like the heart and soul, you know, and has been obviously now for over a decade. I think it's like, she gets a fair amount of attention insofar as any WNBA player gets attention, which is to say not much. But like, it's still not enough when you consider what exactly she's done kind of in her career. I mean, it's like she joined the league not like that long after it started, and she's been there for a really long time and just been consistently great and stuck with the Storm. Even as they needed to like rebuild and stuff. And now she brought them a third championship. And I mean, it's just like, there just aren't that many stories like that in Seattle sports, or like, I don't know, in sports period, you know, mm-hmm. that kind of commitment to a team. I don't know. It's really cool and it's special. So.
Yeah. I think that was a cool part of the story. The fact that, you know, she was the only player left from the 2010 team, and that there was this period in between where the Storm entirely rebuilt the roster around a young core, first getting Jewel Lloyd with the number one pick, and then the following year, after aggressively trying to lose some games late in the season, getting the chance to draft Breonna Stewart number one. I think what really stood out to me about this year for Sue Bird was there was kind of a Sue Bird moment. Not that people hadn't always loved Sue Bird or, you know, considered her one of the great athletes in Seattle sports history, but this year's postseason, her performance in Game 3 against Phoenix as part of that game five against Phoenix as part of that thrilling come from behind win to send the Storm to the WNBA Finals, really the most dramatic part of the season, and her making a ton of huge shots in that fourth quarter, having one of the best performances of her career on that stage, that really seemed to resonate kind of in the way that, you know, the WNBA maybe captured the zeitgeist of Twitter a little more this year than it had before. That seemed to resonate both locally and nationally.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think it's like, I feel like people maybe saw a side of her that they weren't expecting to in that game. You know what I mean? Cause like, she's a pretty like low key person generally, you know, like her whole vibe and presentation is like kind of unassuming. And so like in that game, she's got the mask on. So that's already a whole thing because of her broken nose. And people had seen her like have that happen, you know, and the fact that she kind of like just basically dusted herself off and kept going. And then she's like hitting these crazy shots and like playing really aggressively. And, you know, her versus Diana Taurasi, you know, there's that great rivalry there because they're friends, but like seeing them go at each other is so fun because they're both so spectacular. But like, it is really like aggressive, you know, and that I think surprised people who are watching who don't like think of the WNBA that way. And maybe especially don't think about Sue Bird that way. But it's like, it's cool that she got to like kind of challenge people's expectations a little bit and be like, yeah, maybe I'm the oldest player in the WNBA, but that's not going to stop me from like, you know, doing this stuff that all the, that might be more of like a young person's thing, or I don't know. Also, I think it's like, aside from just like the sports aspect, the fact that Sue Bird came out last year and has kind of spent this year really sort of being public about her relationship with Megan Rapinoe, and you know, that's not even a conventional thing, even despite this cliche that most women athletes are lesbians, which may or may not be true. But it's still pretty unusual to have a woman athlete be in a relationship out, you know, and the fact that it's with Megan Rapinoe, who is also this incredible Seattle athlete, is just like icing on the cake. So that's a whole other cool aspect to her sports impact this year.
100%. I mean, when you were talking about seeing a different side of Sue, I mean, that was part of what I came to mind for me, is that, you know, for years she had lived such an extraordinarily private personal life. And, you know, if I recall correctly, the title of Michelle Vopel's great story on ESPN.com, where Sue did come out publicly for the first time, was, you know, Sue Bird is ready to let you in. And I think that's probably an accurate description. Like, we've learned probably more about Sue as a persona and, you know, personality in the last year plus since that story and since she revealed she was dating Megan Rapinoe than we saw of her in all the time leading up to that.
Yeah, no, definitely. And that helps, you know, that gives like her public image some heft. You know, you get this like new on, not new, but sort of more visible on-court persona on this big stage combined with like her sort of sharing her personal life in a way that she hasn't before. And it's like suddenly she's just sort of on a different tier as far as visibility. And that's, you know, good for all of Seattle sports, especially in a moment when like, until the Seahawks just recently like revived themselves, it was like looking pretty grim there for a second, you know?
Yeah, in terms of the pro sports, yeah. Should we take a couple minutes to rave about how awesome Breanna Stewart was in 2018?
Probably. Where's like the list of all of her achievements? There's so many to talk about.
Yeah, I mean, it's Sue's list of championships and Stewie's list of individual accolades, and obviously she has a lot of the championships, including 4 and 4 years at UConn to go with them. But you know, this was the year where she was always really good, and I think maybe even a little underrated, particularly as a rookie, when, you know, she was near the top of the league in my wins above replacement player, like legitimately had an MVP case as a rookie, although she didn't get much consideration for the award. But this is the year that, you know, the team success kind of followed and she went to another level as a player.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's just, she's like unstoppable, and it's like totally nonchalant. She's just like, yep, here I am. You know, there's none of the, I don't know. It's crazy to watch her because she just does these things, and it's still surprising, you know, even though we all know how great she is and have seen for so long how great she is. It's just like, wow, she's really pulling all of that off. But yeah, and it's also great that she's so young, you know, and like she's going to be with the Storm hopefully for a while. I don't know. It's exciting. And like also the fact that her and Sue Bird both went directly from winning the WNBA title to going to the FIBA World Cup. And there they won the gold medal too, you know, alongside a bunch of other great WNBA players. It's just like they can't stop.
Great point. It was a huge year for the two of them. And then kind of similar to Sue, you know, In Breanna Stewart's case, in terms of maturing off the court and, you know, revealing more of her personality, her courageously coming forward and talking about the sexual abuse she suffered from a relative as a child, and, you know, how that kind of translated into then her becoming more vocal as an activist off the court. Really awesome to see that transition for her.
Yeah, no, it's amazing and like incredibly brave. And again, it's just not something that many other athletes are doing, you know, in the WNBA, out of the WNBA, you know, they're both really setting themselves apart, like you said, on and off the court. And that's like, and they're in Seattle, like we're so lucky, you know, and that's, you know, not even talking about the rest of our amazing Seattle Storm players, but it's crazy. I just wish more people would pay attention, you know, still like screaming at everyone to notice what they're doing, you know.
Hopefully the excitement of the championship run this year kind of translates going into the 2019 season and beyond. Going to put you on the spot here, Natalie. Do you have, we're about to do our bold prediction segment. Do you have a bold prediction for Seattle sports in the year 2019?
Ooh, all of Seattle sports.
Okay. I mean, if you want to do Storm, that's great. Since I couldn't come up with anything for them, it's kind of tough to do bold predictions about a team that's the favorite to win the championship.
Right. Yeah, there's not much that's bold there. This is tough. I see, to me, in my head, it feels bold to say like the Seahawks might win their wild card game, but I don't know if that's actually bold, you know. But to me, it feels bold because of where we started the season. You know what I mean? And I know they look much better now, but I think they could do it.
Depends if they're the 5 or the 6 seed. It's a lot bolder prediction if they're going into Chicago to play the first weekend of the playoffs rather than Dallas, I think.
That's fair. Yeah. So, well, fingers crossed. But I think, you know, they're having flashes of a team that could keep it together for at least one game, which is shocking to me.
We'll see in some of the bold predictions, I think, that we did come up with for 2018. All right, well, thanks so much for taking the time, Natalie. Everyone, be sure, as always, to check out your work at SBNation.com and then on Twitter at Natalie Weiner.
Awesome. Thank you guys so much for having me.
All right, guys. Well, what do you want to do? We want to go over whatever terrible predictions I made? I don't remember.
Well, that's a great way to jump into it.
Okay.
we welcome back Third Pelton Brother and ESPN star. Host of the Mina Kimes podcast, standout on Around the Horn. Mina Kimes, welcome back for a second consecutive year to the Bold Predictions segment.
Thank you for correctly introducing me as the Third Pelton Brother. As more as you can get.
Right at the top of the list of things you've done. Last year we had you on, and so then you were just able to make fun of our bold predictions as we reviewed then the 2017 bold predictions. This time, we've actually got a chance to go back.
We've got receipts now.
When did we do this? I forgot I made predictions. What day was it?
It was the week before. It was between week 16 and week 17 of the NFL season. Like, so before,
basically, exactly a year ago.
Before the off. Oh, this is chilling. This is not going
to. I did not count it as an official bold prediction, but I think you said that you thought the Seahawks were going to make the playoffs, that the Falcons were going to lose that week, that game they needed to lose, and then the Seahawks were going to win. Of which neither of those two things ended up happening.
That was rough. That last. I mean, it was ultimately meaningless, but what a humiliation. Week 17 was last year.
It's always the problem with the NFL season for us is that we're recording these bold predictions before week 17, and it often is a big swing. Like there was one year where, you know, we recorded it right before that, like we assumed the Seahawks were going to get the 2 seed. This was 2 years ago, and then where they ended up dropping down to the 3 seed and eventually losing at Atlanta, and that would have changed the bold predictions pretty dramatically.
Yeah, I think, well, this year, so this is just going to come out before Sunday, right?
Yes.
So I think the seeding really matters.
Yes.
This year, so it's going to make a huge difference whether Seattle's 5 is most likely or 6.
We really like to record in the week before they lose to the Cardinals at the end of the year.
Or sometimes just after they lose to the Cardinals. Sometimes that happens in week 16 and it ruins Christmas.
The Cardinals are so bad. They're so bad this year.
Not the only NFC West team that's bad, but we're going to get to that because it's time to review our 2018 bold predictions. We'll start with mine, which were not very good. All right, bold prediction number one. The Mariners will have a new manager this time next year. Instead, of course, Scott Servais signed an extension in July when the Mariners were riding high prior to their second half collapse.
I'm not ready to talk Mariners until 2021, so we can check back in then.
That's about right. All right, my second bold prediction, my best bold prediction, the Huskies will play in the Rose Bowl for the first time since the 2000 season.
Kevin.
So there we go.
Look at that. That's amazing.
All right, next up, Sounders will reach the semifinals of the CONCACAF Champions League. They ended up losing the quarterfinal to Chivas 3-1 on aggregate.
Heartbreak.
Seahawks trade Richard Sherman. I was a little too optimistic about his trade value with an $11 million base salary for 2018. And while I was right that the Seahawks were going to move on, of course, he was waived instead.
Finally.
Partial credit for that one.
Yeah.
Next up, we'll bring in one of Mina's here. Because we had dueling bold predictions on Chris Carson. I predicted that he would rush for fewer than 500 yards this season. Off the example of Thomas Rawls, Mina said that Carson would rush for more than 1,000 yards, and with a game left in the season, he has already achieved that one.
There you go. Nice work.
Yeah, thank you. I've been high on Chris Carson for a long time. Do you think he's one of the five best running backs in the NFL. Is that something, you guys with me on that?
Third Pelton brother Ben Baldwin has made a strong case based on his broken tackle rate that Carson belongs in that group.
I mean, did you see what he did in the Kansas City game? Like, I just don't see that many backs. He's amazing.
How about, the fourth down, the goal line score against San Francisco, where he just shakes defenders off him. I mean, and he somehow didn't know it was fourth down. That's the most amazing part of that run.
Yeah. My favorite thing was the touchdown in his last game when he had already crossed the goal line and Russell Wilson kind of pushed him.
Yeah, that was a great tweet.
He really does a lot of those like meaningless blocks and the little things that count.
But don't you feel good anytime you see Russell Wilson out in front of a running back? You just know that play is going well.
The best thing about Chris Carson this year is how weirdly confident we are on third and fourth and one now. And the previous, even including the previous beast, could never, ever pick up those third and fourth and shorts. And now Chris Carson's money basically all the time on those. It's amazing to be able to do it.
What percentage would you attribute that to Chris Carson being, the load he is versus Solari in the new scheme?
I think Carson's definitely a part of it. Because he's pushing players himself more so than just having big holes or anything.
But I do also give them credit. They're doing less of the, let's get seven offensive linemen and a fullback and bring everyone into the box, despite their fondness for playing six offensive linemen quite successfully. Like, they're spreading it out more in those situations and using the threat of the pass or the read option.
Absolutely, yeah. Good prediction by me.
We also we'll bring in one of Tristan's here too, because it also related to the running back position for the Seahawks. He predicted that the Seahawks will draft a running back within the first three rounds.
I said within the first three rounds?
Yes.
I said their first pick would be a running back. Your
official bold prediction was within the first three rounds.
I think you misheard that. Because I said the first draft pick that they made in the 2019 draft would be a running back, which you're welcome. I mean, you're not welcome for the pick, but you're welcome for the prediction.
Do you think there's any chance they draft a running back next year?
First round.
Or just at all?
I thought about whether they might draft Myles Gaskin in the later rounds, but they do love having a lot of players at running back.
I mean, they drafted Carson in the seventh round, and he didn't seem like a player who was necessarily going to be on the team. So if they use a seventh round pick on a running back, I do not care.
Yeah, that's fine.
That's fine.
All right, returning to my bold predictions, Jalen Noel declares for the NBA draft, but ultimately decides to return for his sophomore year at UW. Lo and behold, he did not declare for the draft. And then lastly, Breanna Stewart leads the WNBA in scoring. Well, Stewie, as we just talked about, won MVP. She finished second in scoring behind Elizabeth Cambage. So I went 1-for-7 this year on my bold predictions.
You were very close on a lot of them.
I feel like my process was better than the results.
Seven. How many did I make?
So I counted, you made some predictions about just like players staying or leaving, similar to what we did with Ben Baldwin the following week. So I counted those for a total of 9. Okay, let's get to Tristan's next. We have Seahawks will draft a running back within the first 3 rounds. Next up, another one that two of you made predictions about. Tristan predicted the Seahawks will retain Darrell Bevell, Tom Cable, and Chris Richard, and mercifully went 0-3. Mina predicted, although she thought the Seahawks would make the playoffs, that if they did not, that they would fire Tom Cable. So got that one too.
The real Super Bowl right there.
I love hearing when Russell Wilson is talking to Cable Thanos that, like, he's talking about his previous offensive line coach. He's like, Cable Thanos, you're the man. Comparing him to a person who wanted to destroy half of the universe.
Have we ever established whether that nickname comes from me? Because I came up with the Cable Thanos comparison, but did he already, like, when did that, has the origin story been concretized yet?
Is that you, the image of Tom Cable as yes. Thanos?
Oh, no, please. I'm far too lazy to make something that good. But I think I tweeted that he kind of looks like him. I think the tweet is, this is a weirdly niche take.
Yep.
But Tom Cable kind of looks like Thanos. You guys can look it up and look up the timestamp. Then someone, I forget who, made the Photoshop, which was excellent. So I don't know when Cable Thanos, because originally he was called
Calvin Boolidge.
Yes.
It's yeah. definitely this definitely comes from you.
Okay, thank you.
And then you got 10 bold predictions right somehow.
10 out of 9.
Okay, so I was definitely wrong. I think I was feeling negative about the Seahawks and just assuming that they were going to keep all these people.
I didn't disagree. I didn't put it as a bold prediction, but I kind of felt the same way. All right, here's my single favorite bold prediction. I've been teasing this for weeks because I love it so much. God. The Rams and the 49ers will play a DVOA bowl.
Wow.
Wow.
The 49ers ended up peaking at 25th in DVOA this season.
I had no idea that Garoppolo was going to get hurt.
We even had a DVOA bowl this year, too.
We did.
And it featured a team from L.A., but not the Rams.
It didn't. I mean, it could have been the Rams, certainly.
I mean, well, the crazy thing with the Niners is, like, even if Garoppolo wasn't hurt, you know, what are they in defense? Probably. Yeah,
they're horrible.
Yeah, horrible. Obviously, some of that flows from the offense, but still, I think they've been such a letdown, even regardless of the quarterback injury.
I did say I'm taking the under on the 49ers in response to that bold prediction. All right, next up, we have Tristan saying the Mariners will trade Nelson Cruz, a prediction I called not that bold that turned out untrue. He was in the final season of his contract, but of course they held on to him. Then him is their season collapse. Next up, UW football loses to Auburn and then wins their next 12 games. Man, just did not see that Cal loss.
I called them losing to Auburn, though.
You did. All right, this one has been kind of controversial, but I gave it to you. Seattle's new NHL team, nicknamed the Salmon, will break records for season ticket deposits, and many will declare Seattle a hockey town in fall 2018 with the city's other fall sports teams struggling.
Very specific.
Yeah. Tristan is the leader in terms of ones that are like very difficult to score because there's so many clauses.
The Salmon, really?
I mean, I'm taking they'll be named something water-based, so I'm counting Salmon as everything water-based.
You gotta go a little broader next year.
But of course I gave this to you because they did in fact sell 10,000 deposits in the first 12 minutes and eventually capped the list at 33,000, helping confirm the interest here and convince the NHL to grant an expansion franchise to Seattle. Our number one story of 2018. My bonus prediction here was that there would be no NHL team in 2018.
Wow,
got that one right. I was good at the. I
Wait,
was good
you got
at the,
that right?
That there was no team name.
Oh, there will be no team name.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I was good at predicting which of your bold predictions would be wrong.
Great.
Next up, one that I didn't really know how to score. Seattle will seem to be further from getting an NBA team than we are now.
Oh, man. I don't know how to answer that. It feels like the same, maybe?
Right. That's how I would describe it.
Hold on. I'm going to delete one of my bold predictions for this year because it's the exact same bold prediction.
Every year you're going to keep predicting that. I mean, the Phoenix thing, like that maybe feels a little bit closer, but if that doesn't happen, then I guess it could feel further in 2019.
I wrote for this year, there will be no discernible progress towards securing an NBA team in Seattle.
Again, that's not a bold prediction.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Lastly, UW football has a top five recruiting class in terms of average grades in 2019. In fact, they are currently ranked number 16 by 24/7 Sports, God, number 16 by Rivals, number 17 by ESPN. The Huskies, I got to be
five.
Bold prediction. I don't think they're ever signing a top five recruiting class in the Chris Peterson era.
Wow.
That one, that one's going to need some time to bake in the oven, that take.
Or ever. I mean, I don't know. There are just so many teams.
Can I interrupt with a tangential story? I did a piece this summer on Jalen Ramsey.
Yep.
And he was talking about all of his college trips, and he was telling me how much he loved UW and how close he came to deciding to go to Washington, then changed his mind at the last minute because the flight was so far. And I feel like that happens a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, that's always going to make it tough for them to recruit nationally. Just geographically is an issue. And then, I mean, I think with Coach Pete in particular, like, he's not necessarily looking for the highest rated.
He's not trying to sign a top five recruiting class. Man, Jalen Ramsey would have been such a good Husky under Chris Peterson.
Yeah, I do not have any memory of this.
I mean, my God. Anyways.
Him opposite Marcus Peters at one point. That would have been fun.
All right, let's hear it. Is that all of mine?
That is all of yours. So you went 2 or 3 out of 8, depending on how one scores the NBA one. Leslie, we finish with Mina, who I want to note, last year said, if you're getting 50% or better of your bold predictions, they're not bold enough.
There we go.
All right, so her bold predictions. I mean, some of these obviously were not intentionally not bold. The Mariners will not make the playoffs.
Woo! Bold.
That was correct. We got the Seattle Fire, Tom Cable. Chris Carson rushes for more than 1,000 yards. Correct, correct. Sheldon Richardson leaves, and Paul Richardson leaves.
Well, right. Less of a sigh about Paul Richardson.
It's just Nostradamus, my God.
Jimmy Graham returns. Richard Sherman returns, not as strong.
I don't know why I thought they would keep Graham. I guess I thought they figured that they wouldn't be able to replace the red zone production. Right. I will say I was higher on Lockett versus Richardson than some, but I don't think this was before they signed Ed Dixon. I was low on that signing too, and I think I was wrong. I think that has ended up being a pretty good signing.
Yeah, certainly in terms of touchdown production. Then the Seahawks will draft an outside linebacker with their first pick. Might have been nice.
Wouldn't have minded that. When did Leighton Vander Esch was 19, right? We were sandwiched, the pick we traded down from, I believe, was sandwiched between Derwin James and Leighton Vander Esch.
Oh my God.
Great job, guys. Okay, sorry. I know.
This is a celebratory week for the Seahawks, Mina. We're not supposed to remember those things right now. We're in the playoffs.
We are in the playoffs. Imagine if we had Leighton Vander Esch, we're in the playoffs, though.
Yeah. All right, lastly, one of Mina's predictions that we cannot determine is yet, the Seahawks will not win the NFC West, but will do better in the playoffs than the division winner.
Ooh,
I love that.
That's going to be challenging since the Rams have a bye. But
I mean, we're still halfway there, though. It's like you at least get half credit for that because they didn't make the playoffs or they didn't win the NFC West. And we just have to wait for them to do better than the Rams.
That's a pretty smoking hot prediction because the Cable Thanos videos have really reminded us of how many people were really low on this team. And sounds like I wasn't as low as I thought.
Right.
I forgot that. Although that was before a lot of the guys, like, walked or, yeah, so, whatever. I'm sticking by it.
I should clarify, by the way, the Rams have not yet locked up a bye. They still need to win this weekend or have the Chicago Bears lose in order to assure themselves the number 2 seed in the NFC. All right, it's time to get to our 2019 bold predictions.
Oh, man.
Who wants to go first?
Not me.
All right. I'll go first. I have a lot of Seahawks bold predictions. I ended up deleting the one What about the discernible progress about the NBA? Because I don't want to make that same prediction year after year after year. Although I did predict that the Seahawks would play the Steelers in the Super Bowl about four straight years. And in some of those years, I was right about them playing in the Super Bowl and was never right about the Steelers.
I think there was a year I predicted the Seahawks were going to get, or the Seattle was going to get an NHL team. And in hindsight, I should have just kept predicting that until I was right.
Yes. Okay, for this year, number one Mariners prediction, Jerry DePoto, following your Scott Service prediction, Jerry DePoto will not be the Mariners GM a year from now.
See, I contemplated that, but I feel like they've kind of like backed themselves into a corner. And he just signed a contract extension like Service last July. And this is an organization that is not going to be getting a lot of money from selling tickets to fans the next few years here. So I don't know if they're going to want to be spending an extra
money. I don't
know
if you've seen Mariners fans. They're still going to go. The winning and losing barely matters.
I don't know if you've seen the attendance in April. They may not go.
Okay, I've got a chunk of Seahawk ones. Seahawk ones together.
No, let's do
Oh, we're going to do one
teams,
at a time.
Yeah.
Okay.
So my Mariners prediction is that they will lose 100 games for the first time since 2010.
I'm going to go bold and say the Mariners finish with a better... Did I stun you guys into silence?
we lost you right when the prediction was coming.
It was perfect.
You're like, the Mariners will win, and then it was just nothing.
I was like, oh, I mean, I know it's hot, but my prediction is that the Mariners would finish with a better record than the Rangers.
Ooh,
wow.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, they're both going to be bad, but...
I don't know anything about the Rangers.
Yeah, we know nothing about the Rangers. So. Yeah.
The only thing I know is that I was like considering the Mariners will have the worst record in baseball. And then I looked at the Orioles record this year and I was like, nope.
Also, just that the Mariners, the 100 losses for the first time since 2010.
Yeah, it's not that long. Could have gone franchise record. The franchise record, I believe, is 104 losses. So that's in play.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, let's do the Seahawks ones.
Okay, so a lot of Seahawks ones here. First off, for the 2019 playoffs coming up, the Seahawks will lose in the playoffs to the eventual Super Bowl champion.
Okay. Huh.
I agree with that. It's going to be the Saints, so yeah.
That's reasonable.
Yeah.
All right, my first Seahawks bold prediction. After everyone freaks out all offseason, this is a Tristan-like one, but we'll have an actual quantifiable thing. Russell Wilson will sign his contract extension within the week leading up to Seahawks training camp.
Nice.
Ooh. I think they're definitely going to. They got to beat out. There's some other big extensions coming up, right? So you always want to get in front of that. So if they're smart, and the Seahawks have what? Like they're in the top 10 in cap space, I believe, this year, right?
Yep.
I'm with you on that. All right, I'll do a draft one. With their first pick, of this draft, the Seahawks will take a free safety.
Oh, I did the exact same bold prediction, but said who the free safety was going to be. Well, not necessarily a free safety, but the Seahawks will take Taylor Rapp with their first pick in the 2019 draft.
Okay. I love these UW-centric. Okay, yeah. I love, I love him.
I had a draft-related one for the Seahawks. It was not about safety, which is a good thought by the both of you. My Seahawks draft-related prediction is that they will draft a kicker looking to follow up their success with Michael Dixon this year by again shoring up a long problematic skill position or special teams position. Perhaps LSU's Cole Tracy, who has had a big year as a grad transfer this year. So,
is he Australian?
He's not, sadly.
Is he the top projected kicker right now?
He was the top one I found in my 2 minutes of searching on Google.
Because I really want the Seahawks to take Justin Yoon. Although, the Notre Dame's Korean kicker, although that would be like too much emotion for me.
Yeah.
I think since I don't want that to happen. Guys, Sebastian Janikowski is a real problem. I feel like not everyone's like insufficiently freaking out about that.
I might be insufficiently freaking out about that.
He's bad.
We had such a real problem last year, especially in talking on it in the week leading up to the week 17 game, that the Seahawks lost mostly because of Blair Walsh. It's like Sebastian Janikowski is a problem, but he hasn't reached real problem yet to me.
We are down to Janikowski is now in the bottom 11 of NFL kickers. So definitely like replaceable level, but
not great.
Not great, but
oh man.
Chicago and Minnesota, both likely playoff teams, and the Rams, although that was largely because of Greg Zuerlein's injury. Several playoff teams with worse place kicking so far than the Seahawks. Tennessee and Indiana, also one of Indianapolis, one of whom will make the playoffs. The Chargers, obviously. Yeah.
All right. Should I do another Seahawks bold prediction?
Yeah.
Earl Thomas will be a New England Patriot next season.
Huh. I thought about where will Earl Thomas go. My thought was he joins Richard Sherman with the Niners. But that's not an official bold prediction.
I got to look at the cap. There's so many teams that need free safeties, which is interesting coming off of such a weak market last season.
Yeah, I mean, I just don't. It'll be interesting to see if it actually translates into the market being better or just teams completely devalue that position at this point.
Am I up? Okay. Frank Clark will become the highest paid pass rusher in the NFL briefly, ooh, and then will be immediately surpassed by someone else. Hey, come on. Sorry, my dog is already agitating for dinner. It's 3:30 here, and he eats at 4 o'clock, and about 3:15 is when he begins his campaign, and it's a long tug of war between us for about 45 minutes.
When Pete hugged Frank Clark on the sideline, I think after a sack this last Sunday, I was like, he's getting paid so much money.
So much money. It's going to be everyone's going to be really angry. I'll just say that right now.
All right, I had another contract-related one because it's the contract extension no one's talking about, and they should be. Bobby Wagner, whose contract is also up after the 2019 season, and I am predicting that he will sign a contract extension with the highest guarantee ever for a middle linebacker, which is currently Luke Kuechly's $27 million on his extension signed in 2015, actually not long after Wagner signed his previous the extension he's currently working on.
So can they pay Clark, Wagner, and Russell Wilson crazy money?
I mean, probably because they've got so much of the dead cap coming off. And then, you know, it's also all about how you structure these contracts long term. I think the strategy they'll probably take with Russ and maybe with Wagner as well is to guarantee a relatively high percentage in exchange for a slightly smaller annual hit.
I think that makes sense. And I'm looking at the 2019 free agent class, and I don't really – like, I think they're far more likely to overspend in-house than to pay for a free agent again this year. So I think all of our predictions could be true.
They haven't – I mean, have they given a third contract to a defensive player without a battle?
That's the issue. But I kind of think they might because – I've all along felt that a lot of the, like, you know, we're not going to pay Sherm or whatever, Bennett, we're going to like a lot of that was like Bobby's the guy. I've felt for a long time from the language coming from inside the organization that Bobby was their guy. He's the leader of the team, that they valued him higher than the rest of the NFL, although now I think it's probably impossible. So if there was one player where I feel like they would just completely splurge on, it would be Wagner in my mind.
Yeah, I used to think that was Earl Thomas, but now I likewise think it's Bobby.
Yeah.
All right, other Seahawks pulled predictions.
The last one for the Seahawks. This is, I have to do the presumptive favorite, but a year from now, Russell Wilson will be the presumptive favorite for the MVP.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I think that's so hard with Mahomes existing.
I think that's so hard with how much they run the ball.
Yeah.
I was looking at the over-under we did before the season in our live podcast for Russell Wilson passing yards, and let's just say it's going to need a lot of yards on Sunday to get there.
Really?
About 700 of them.
Do you guys know what kind of contract Brian Schottenheimer is? Well, I guess you never know with coordinators.
Yeah, that usually doesn't get reported.
Yeah, it doesn't get reported. I mean, there's no doubt in my mind that he's returning next season. Oh, how do you feel about that?
Unless he gets a head coaching job.
It's fine. I think that the last couple of weeks they've shown that they're able to utilize Russell Wilson's ability to pass the ball, and especially kind of those last few drives against the Chiefs. And maybe, just maybe, they're going to break out the good offense for more than just like three series a game.
I mean, you're still talking about a game where how many yards did he throw for? 271? Like, it's 2018.
A lot of those were in the second half, though.
Yes.
Yeah, and any play where it's like 3rd and 12 and Russell Wilson pulls a rabbit out of his hat, I'm not going to give to Brian Schottenheimer. I find like our Seahawks fans' relationship with him is so funny because it's like so begrudging, right? And then now it's almost like it's like a meme where like we are like kind of like him, but also not at all. It's like so hard to define, I feel like, our perception of him at this point.
I mean, also the bar was set so low.
Yeah, true. Yeah. Well, let me ask you guys a question. Like, I'm thinking about another team outside of like the brilliant offensive coordinators. Looking around the NFL, do you feel like there are a lot of coordinators you would train him for?
I mean, the problem is that him being the offensive coordinator, almost who the offensive coordinator is, almost doesn't matter, because they're going to take the directive from Pete. And if they had hired, like, I mean, we talked about the Vikings this year being kind of like the Seahawks last year. If they'd hired John DeFilippo this offseason, who we would have been thrilled with at the time, the situation may have ended up the same as it did in Minnesota.
And the run directive, that's from Pete. Like, people have forgotten, like, they passed more than they ran the first two games, as I recall. Then Pete, apparently, I remember it was, like, after the Bears game, it was reported that Pete, like, and Schott and I were like, all right. We're not going to do it this way, you know? And as much as that frustrates me at times, it's clearly coming from the head coach.
Yes. It's hard to give Shoddy the blame completely for it.
Yeah. And he's done far more inventive and smart things than I would have given credit for before the season. Even things like simple things, like, I don't know, RPOs at the goal line, right? Which we're always screaming for. Like, he's done that, you know? Like, bunching receivers. Like, he's not a horror show by any means.
No,
definitely not.
All right, Mina, do you have any other Seahawks bold predictions?
I want to make like a this season one. I don't think it's a bold prediction to say they'll beat the Cowboys. I imagine they'll be favorites, don't you think?
That was Natalie Weiner's bold prediction, is that they'd win the first round playoff game. And we pointed out that maybe not so bold if it's the Cowboys, although bolder if it's Chicago.
I don't think the Seahawks will be favored, but I think it'll be less than the 3-point home field advantage window.
Yes.
All right. I don't think they're going to beat New Orleans as much as I would love for that to happen, so I don't want to make that my prediction. Here's one. How about this? I think the Seahawks will finish with a better record than the Rams next year.
That's pretty bold. That is definitely very bold.
Right? Bold. All right. That's it for me then. I'll do that one.
Okay, moving on from the Seahawks. UW football.
This is my last bold prediction, and that is that the Washington Huskies will repeat as Pac-12 champions in 2019 behind a top-5 ranked defense nationally.
So you saw the Justin Herbert news?
Yeah, I saw the Justin Herbert news. And you know what? I know that Oregon is coming to Seattle next year. He made the wrong decision on when to go out.
Yeah, I'm with you on that.
He should have gone out in like week 9.
Yeah, right after that Husky game. Should have been when he left.
I just don't. I mean, dude was going to get drafted in the top 10, top 5. At least, I don't know. I'm surprised.
It feels kind of like the NBA, where like the longer you stick around, the more scouts tend to pick up your flaws. I feel like that could happen with Justin Herbert.
Yeah, it's just, this is such a weak draft. Anyways,
he would have been the top quarterback chosen in this upcoming draft before Dwayne Haskins. And next year it's TBD. Also, I don't think Justin Herbert is very good.
Exactly. He's more chances to get exposed. I think he's better than you do, but I mean, Tua's significantly better than him. So I don't know. Yep.
Yes.
My Husky-related bold prediction, also about the quarterback position. Well, I guess yours wasn't, but about the quarterback position. Jacob Eason will be a healthy reserve at some point during the 2019 season, losing his job to presumably Jake Haener. We've been on the record dating back to when Eason first transferred here that I think he's probably overrated. Like, he's got, everyone talks about the physical tools, the arm strength, that sort of thing. But the accuracy wasn't there when he played as a freshman at Georgia. He ranked 11th among qualifying SEC QBs in QBR as a freshman. He had a lower QBR as a freshman than Jake Browning did. Obviously not nearly as effective at the controls of the Georgia offense with all those amazing weapons.
He had a pretty questionable offensive coordinator, though.
Was Schottenheimer there in 2016? I don't think it was 2016 that he was there. But all these amazing running backs who are now stars in the NFL. And with that same group, then Jake Fromm came in the next year as a freshman and had the second best QBR in the SEC, nearly 30 points higher. So I think that Eason is not the savior that everyone is expecting, and that Jake Haener will at least at some point play ahead of him. That's I feel like my boldest prediction sweet spot of where, like, I think there's a good rationale for it, but it's also a really bold prediction because everyone is expecting Jacob Eason to be a stud next year. Okay, I guess I'm the only one that has anyone else. A Sounders bold prediction, they finish atop the Western Conference in the 2019 regular season, something they have done just once in franchise history in 2014. Of course, they've gotten off to the terribly slowest starts the last three seasons, which have left them just scrambling just to make the playoffs in many cases, although they did get all the way up to second last season. But I think with Raul Diaz in place from the start of the year this time around, I think this is going to be a stronger start than we're used to here from the Sounders, and they will carry it through all season long. And then lastly, UW men's basketball reaches the Pac-12 championship game for the first time since 2011, but does not make the NCAA tournament nonetheless. Hashtag one bid Pac-12.
We'll see. I was almost going to predict that the Husky basketball team was going to make the NCAA tournament.
That might qualify as a bold prediction at this point.
I'm not willing to go there, though. I'm not that bold.
I was just silently judging your picks. No.
That's perfect for a podcast.
Yeah, really. Good use of the form.
Well, Mina, thank you so much for joining us and delivering some more bold predictions. We'll of course be following you on your Twitter at Mina Kimes all year long. We're ready for you to invent the next cable Thanos anytime now.
I'm not trying to take credit for anything other than potentially the name, but the name. I spoke cable wiring into existence, so hopefully my Seahawks will have a better record than the Rams thing will happen.
Watch out for doppelgangers this next year.
I forgot that was going to be my joke at the start of this. Is you know her from Around the Horn, Amazon commercials.
Still not getting paid for those.
Are you going to meet up with the actress?
I don't know. Maybe if I do a live podcast show in Seattle, which could be happening this summer, maybe I'll have her just take my place and spit hot and felt cake.
It's like an MF Doom type situation. You need a mask. People will never know which Mina's there.
I feel like, well, podcast is the perfect scenario because, like, they don't really know. Well, like, that's not really true. I guess if you listen to podcasts, most people will see my picture. But, you know, I feel like it would fool some people.
It definitely would. My bold prediction is that if you do come to Seattle for a live podcast this summer, that it will be quite popular and sell out.
Oh, thank you. Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
On that note, thanks so much.